about the pain and frustration that many Americans are feeling about our criminal justice system. I'm very pleased that the Department of Justice will be investigating what happened in Ferguson or Staten Island. Each of us has to grapple with some hard truths about race and justice in America. Because despite all the progress we've made together, we have allowed our criminal justice system to get out of balance. And I personally hope that these tragedies give us the opportunity to come together as a nation to find our balance again.
Radio
underground. We have audio, no video.
Radio Free Beagle.
This is a pirate transmission from District 13. Repeat, this is a pirate transmission from District 13 with a message.
Radio Free Redoubt begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
This is the voice of the American Redoubt. I am John Jacob Schmidt, your host. Thank you for joining us all across the American Redoubt and outside the wire in occupied territory and the other free zones peppered across this great continent. This is going to be a really good show. We've got James Wesley Rawls. That is going to be who's going to be joining us here in just about 10 minutes or so. We're going to talk to him about a new book that he's got out, and we're going to talk about prepping. I'm going to ask him some things that he might have as far as recommendations for those that are just getting started. So I want to make sure that we leave plenty of time for that. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook.com/Radio Free Redoubt. That's where we put up the most timely information. We've got a whole team of us, several volunteer partisans that help keep fresh content up there with developments that, well, that relate to you and me as patriots, God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots. And what do I want to go into? Oh, yesterday, that's what I want to remind you. Two things. First of all, I will be uploading this volume 24 of Partisan Radio tomorrow at noon. I have all of that together, and I had some, not minor emergencies, but some things that just derailed me from being able to get that up last Monday. But tomorrow, tune in, and that will be uploaded, posted at Partisan Radio and on Amaron.com. With some things that I really want to address with you guys and talk about some training. We've got some training coming up for the month of December for our young next generation partisans. Get ready to sharpen your pencils. And hopefully you should be able to – well, you're probably teaching your mom and dad how to do math. So this will be easy stuff for you, but it's going to be great because we're going to be giving something away, and we'll be talking about that tomorrow at Partisan Radio for the younger generation. All right. Yesterday, you guys have actually, many of you have heard about this story in Hayden, Idaho, in the heart of the American Redoubt, the heart of Patriot territory. We've got a Christian patriot who is dealing with some just a couple neighbors that don't want a Christmas display in their neighborhood. And, of course, the fight's on. So we have some infiltrators here in the American Redoubt, some leftists. And if you want to go back and listen to that, this is one of the things that I've heard back more from probably any other feedback is that you asked some questions and he talked about some stuff that the other media either buried or just did not pursue or didn't, you know, ask the right questions. So go back and listen to that yesterday. That was on our American Christian Network and KTW 630 AM out of Spokane. And that is also, that's uploaded there for you to listen to. Had some issues too, apparently, with the live streaming. I don't know what the deal was with that. I kind of got mixed reports, but some folks were saying, yeah, I was listening to it in my truck driving down the road and it was great. It was a great show. Other folks are saying, yeah, they got some financial show playing. So I don't know. We're trying to get all that sorted out. But it was a little confusing. Okay, where do we want to go next here? Let's just do it. Let's get into the news and commentary, which is brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series about the collapse and the rebuilding. We're talking about the rebuilding. This is really good stuff. So check him out. The audio books are out as well. Okay, the invasion of Europe continues, but citizens have had enough. We heard earlier this week about citizens in Sweden torching refugee centers before they could get refugees moved into them. They got them all set up. Hey, we're going to bring more Middle Eastern, Arabic, and Muslim rapists in, so make room. Well, the citizens are saying no more. We're just sick of it. Burned them to the ground. Five refugee centers. In Germany, there was just hundreds of Germans from they form a human chain physically to protect the border from migrant invasion. And that video, that was just today. Hundreds of Germans formed a human chain at the Czech border today, earlier on Sunday. The protesters linked arms and formed a human chain to stop the migrant invasion. The protest was organized by the anti-Islami Pegida, which is the Patriotic Europeans Against the Islamization of the West activists. Of course, you know, the multicultis are saying that they're haters and close-minded, they're bigots and so on. But, you know, you just can't care what they call you anymore. You're going to have to put your foot down and say, we can't be wiped out. Of course, it's too late for Europe. They played their game and Europe has fallen. So this is why we're saying we can't allow this to happen here, because you can't play around with this little experiment to see how it's going to work out and then realize when it doesn't just nix the whole program. You can't. Once you go there, there's no going back. So it doesn't matter if they call you a hateful person, unconstitutional person for not respecting everybody's views or whatever it is. When you got an invading force coming down on top of you, if you don't stop it at the gate and you let it get inside, you're toast. As so many cultures can attest to throughout history. So now what else are we doing here? Let's stay overseas. You guys heard about the 101st Airborne from Fort Campbell is sending 500 troops to Iraq and apparently some to Kuwait. Now, remember last year when Obama was saying, we're going to fight ISIS, we're going to use technical, surgical, all this other no boots on the ground promises, right? Well, here we go. And here's something else that's really interesting. This is coming at the same time that the U.S. government, this administration, the Grand Mullah in chief, through his administration announced that the U.S. military is making new plans to deter Russian aggression. The United States is adapting its so-called operational posture to counter Russian aggression, Defense Secretary Ashton Carter said yesterday. He said, we're adapting our operational posture and contingency plans as we, on our own and with allies, work to deter Russia's aggression and to help reduce the vulnerability of allies and partners, you know, like ISIS, or I mean freedom fighters in Syria. He said the United States was modernizing its nuclear arsenal, investing in new technologies such as drones and new long-range bombers, as well as lasers, an electromagnetic railgun, and new systems for electronics warfare. The defense chief hinted at additional new weapons that would be, quote, surprising ones I really can't describe here. So they got all kinds of goodies all lined up. Now, you guys, there's a lot of people that were panicked in the last few days. What happened with this, what turned out to be, because if you guys remember, they shut all air traffic west of LAX because they said, you know, military operations. And then yesterday, all these people started uploading on social media these sites of people thought we were under attack. These are nuclear missiles, you know, that we're toast. We're in trouble. Here we go. It's the big one. And of course, everybody's trying to figure, well, it's probably, you know, inbound satellites. It's asteroids. It's nuclear missiles. It's an EMP attack. But it was the military doing training with apparently Trident missiles, you know, nuclear capable missiles. So they're stepping up their game. Of course, this is also happening at the same time we're poking the dragon with a stick, messing around down there in the South China Sea. And you know what? There's just some people making bad decisions that we could all pay the price for. So continue working towards self-reliance. If something breaks, we have to fully expect all logistics to come to a screeching halt. And what you have in your cupboards is all you're going to have for an indefinite period of time. You have to be self-reliant. These people are making decisions. They're playing games with a very high cost to you and me. And I just want to encourage you guys to just I want you to step up your game as far as prepping goes. Start having your things in order. Not only are we dealing with solar flares and the solar flare cycle, which they're saying it's just a matter of time before we get one, a direct. So far, they've glanced past the Earth, which could, you know, disrupt all kinds of electronics, power grid systems, and everything else, similar to an EMP type of an effect. If that happens and our power grid goes down, or from a cyber attack, there's a number of different threats out there. Be stepping up your game. These people are just making some bad choices, and we could suffer for it if we're not prepared. So, and what else we got here? Money. CNN.com is saying it's a blockbuster month in America for jobs. The U.S. economy added 271,000 jobs in October, which is all like Christmas holiday season, temporary seasonal jobs. But they're not going to say that. The unemployment rate also fell to 5%, its lowest level since 2008. Okay, stop. Do you believe this? If you believe this, I've got a gun store to sell you in San Francisco. Because every time we see a financial report about how many jobs were added and how much a booming economy and the unemployment rate, it's always followed up about a week or two later, or 3 weeks later, oh, jobs were actually lower than projected. Oh, it's lower than we thought. Oh, we didn't add as many jobs as we anticipated. They're going to revise these numbers. This is just such a shell game. It's so irresponsible. Oh, here's my story about the bright light in the sky that sent Californians into panic, only for it to be explained soon afterwards as military training with ballistic missiles. Yeah, they're just playing some dangerous games. That's all. There's something that I'm going to be hitting on, and this article here. I've been working on this in my head, and I have notes, and I have a lot of my research material and some other resources that I have from my employment line of work that I've been in for a long time. But here's something from The Intercept. Facing growing encryption, law enforcement recommends more informants. Okay, there – just from the headline, there are several implications to draw from. But what I'm going to do is starting next week. I was going to do that this week, but James Rawls, who's waiting on us, I was going to do a show on informants and how to avoid, detect, and deal with informants, agents, and agents provocateur. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to push that back to next week. So I'm going to probably make that a two-part series, and we're going to talk about informants. I'm going to break all this down, from why we need to be talking about this. I'm going to provide you with some documentation. I'm going to put this into some historical context, and then I'm going to give you some practical steps that you can use for identifying, avoiding, and dealing with informants. Because they're getting more and more frustrated that they can't spy on us because of the effectiveness of this very powerful encryption that's available to us now for free. And I'm going to talk about some of those resources too. We're going to continue talking about that. But tune in tomorrow too. Also, don't forget to download Partisan Radio because I will be talking some about encryption. There are some things that I think we need to be making some adjustments here, and I'm going to be talking about why that is tomorrow. In the American Redoubt, there's a rancher's here's you guys. I don't know if you heard about this situation. Some deputies killed a rancher on the highway, on Highway 95 last weekend. What happened was they have open range, open grazing there. There was a bull on the highway. A car hits the bull. The bull's wounded. The people are trapped in the car. They call for medical services. They call the sheriff's department. Everybody shows up. Dispatch calls the sheriff and says, you got a bull that's down out here, and he's pretty cranked up. He's injured and dangerous. So the rancher shows up on his four-wheeler. Now, there are two deputies there. The bull is laying down at the end of this rancher's driveway, and it's suffering. So he tells his nephew, who's the rancher's wife, his name's Jack, his wife and nephew are standing there. He turns to the nephew, go get the front end loader, get the chains, and get the rifle. Get some like tow chains and get my rifle. Okay, so as the nephew's returning, I'm trying to put all these pieces together, and this is what I've gathered so far. And I know there's more to this story. I want to wait until this is investigated before we, reach any conclusions, but it's not looking good. This whole thing is just messed up. The nephew returns with the rifle and the front end loader and everything. And that's when the bull, apparently he was dangerous. He's wounded. And so they decided to put it down. So they open up on this bull with a .223, AR-15, and a handgun, and they're just wounding it further, which made the bull, it just made everything bad. So this bull finally goes down. He's suffering. He's, shot through the lungs, everything else, and he's still alive. So the rancher takes the rifle, goes up to the bull with the rifle pointed at the bull's head. He's just going to finish it off with one shot. The deputies are standing behind the rancher. One of the deputies reportedly reaches out and grabs the rancher, who had his finger on the trigger, pointed at the bull, about ready to squeeze the trigger. This deputy grabs this rancher and spins him around, and the rifle goes off. The deputies jump back and open up on the rancher. And then the rancher's wife and the nephew get thrown to the ground and handcuffed. And then she, rancher's wife, has a heart attack. This is a mess. So they wouldn't allow them to attend to this rancher who was shot and dying. They didn't administer first aid to him directly. The deputies didn't. This is all reports, and this is all preliminary. This is what's kind of we're trying to make sense of. So we've got a serious situation here. Now, the Idaho State Police, I know several people have forwarded this article to me. Have you heard about this? But hold on. Let's wait till we get all the information in. This does not sound good for the deputies. But the Idaho State Police, they gave assurances. They are going to thoroughly investigate the incident and find out what really happened. And whoever was wrong is going to be – they're going to reveal that. I have faith in them that there will be justice. I have seen the Idaho State Police operate, and they are professional. So we'll see. This is not good. And if the deputies are found wrong, they need to go down. This is well, I would say murder, but manslaughter at best, or second degree murder. If things go down the way that they sound like they are from eyewitness accounts, it's not good. And the deputies are on paid administrative leave. Now, before we go into the break and then bring James Rawls on, there was something that just burned me up. I was so mad. I was mad at the elections this last Tuesday. And midterm elections, November 4th, Tuesday. These elections take place. Now, I'll tell you why this has got me all cranked up. Because in Coeur d'Alene City, there was some very hotly contested seats for the city council. There are two God-fearing Christian patriots that were up for on the ballot to be elected to be put onto the city council. They lost. They lost, and centrist to left center to far left candidates won. Now, this is why I was angry. As it turns out, no, let me stop right there. Idaho is a extremely conservative patriot hotbed. So is Kootenai County over there, where Coeur d'Alene is the county seat. Kootenai County happens to be the top destination for relocating patriots that are strategically relocating to the American Redoubt. On the entire American Redoubt, Kootenai County is the top destination, followed closely by Bonner County just to the north of Kootenai County. And then it goes Latah County down around Moscow, like where the books Patriots, a novel of the coming collapse, that was centered around down in that area, in the Palouse area. That's probably a tie between number three and Kalispell, Montana, and then Stevens County, Washington, which is north of Spokane in Washington. Very much patriot territory. So I laid all that out there to say this. I've met with people and heard from people saying, oh, we thought Coeur d'Alene, we thought that whole area was like extremely liberal. Now, why would they think that? There's two reasons why they think that. Because, first of all, the Coeur d'Alene press is – they would have you think this is some type of liberal mecca, which it is not. It's very heavily conservative. Even the city of Coeur d'Alene is very conservative. I mean, it's full of – the majority of the people are politically conservative. But this is the problem. The Coeur d'Alene press, being as left-wing as it is, and most people can see through it, but they are in bed with the city council, all of whom are pushing left-wing human rights, this whole left-wing agenda, pro-homosexual, anti-gun, this whole thing. So this was a chance to have a change of command. And they lost. Why? I'll tell you why. This is why I was so angry. Because it leads to people getting the impression this is some kind of liberal mecca, but it's not. And what happened was the voter turnout was 18.6%. Out of over 50,000 registered voters, 9,000 showed up to vote. 18%. I was so livid. I was so I felt so unchristian-like, the anger that I had inside of me, because not at the liberals. You can't be mad at the liberals for doing what liberals do. How can you be mad at a dog for eating its own vomit? That's just what they do, right? So when liberals just do this godless agenda, this destructive decadence that they're always trying to push and destroy anything that resembles God. Okay. Or our traditional values, anything like that, anything that's dear to us. But see, we've got the numbers to stand against them, but we don't. And that's the problem. What I was mad at was the so-called Christian patriots. They're not Christian patriots. They're patriotic conservatives. See, this is what I've been saying. This is the difference between patriots and patriotic people. Patriotic people, they get all teary-eyed when they hear the national anthem, and they fly the flag three or four holidays a year. But the rest of the time, they won't get off their asses and make a difference. They sit on their butts at home. And I was so angry. I was sitting there. You know what, Coeur d'Alene? You suck. I mean, I was so mad. I'm still mad. I'm all mad. I was just like, screw you, Coeur d'Alene. You get what you deserve. And of course, Mrs. Schmidt's like, now. So I was like, oh, deep breath. I know you're right. And she's like, I know. But you can't be acting. You can't. So I'm just like, oh, man. Okay, calm down. I'm a Christian. Whew. But, man, the patriots, no, the conservatives are so conservative, they don't want to make any waves. They like their comfortable lives. They wish it weren't this way, but they don't have the intestinal fortitude to do anything to change it. You've got 1% of the patriots doing 90% of the fight. So the rest of the freedom freeloaders can ride the wave and enjoy what little freedom we still have left. People have got to get in the fight. You deserve to lose. Of course, the rest of us don't deserve the reputation that you're helping create by your apathy. All it takes for evil to prevail is for good men to do nothing. How many times can we say it? There's a perfect demonstration of it right there. The problem is most of this listening audience is sitting there nodding their heads going, yeah, yeah. But the conservative, patriotic conservatives in Coeur d'Alene and other hotbeds of conservative people, they think they got it made because it's so conservative here, and they just check out. They're watching Dances with the Stars or whatever they do. I don't know what they do. They're at the movies watching James Bond. After, of course, they go through the firearms check, where they check the women's purses to make sure nobody's got any means of defending themselves. Wow. You know, these people have to lose it all. I just pray for a reset. They're not going to be willing to fight for anything worth fighting for until they've lost it all, until all of this is brought to its knees. They're just content as long as they got their ice cream, their milk and cookies, and they're entertained. It's all good. They're just not worth worrying about. 18% show. You see, and this is what happened in Coeur d'Alene. I don't mean to be going on and on. This is supposed to be news and commentary, but I'm just so angry about this. Because remember when they pushed that pro-homosexual so-called human rights ordinance in Coeur d'Alene? They had standing room only. And they said, we're going to take public comment. Standing room only. The conservatives, there's pastors, there are congregations, citizens. They just packed that place out and said, we stand firmly against this pro-homosexual agenda. And the city council said, okay, well, we better vote. And they voted against the people. It was very clear. Everybody was stunned. I mean, it's about all they could do to stop a riot. So, hey, strike while the iron's hot, right? Look what they just did. Elections are coming up. It's a chance for you to unseat these people. This was 2 years ago. 2 years ago, they had a chance to oust all of the people. They had the candidates, conservative candidates, lined up to beat them. It would have been such an easy win. But what happened? They had like a 15 or 16% voter turnout. And the liberals, the one out of five liberals, they all rallied together and ran down there and voted and kept those people with that leftist agenda, pushing an anti-gun, a pro-homosexual, anti-Christian agenda, and they won. Why? Because the patriotic conservatives sat on their fat butts at home. I just want to choke them. I mean, I'm just going to have to let this – I'm just going to have to another week I'll be cooled down enough. I'll be able to not want to just do unchristian things to these apathetic fools. I'm just so frustrated. I had to say that because I didn't know if you realized I was frustrated. So I just thought I would tell you that. All right, guys. I will give you a break, and we'll be back in just a minute with James Rawls from survivalblog.com. Don't go away. This is the voice of the American Redoubt.
Listening to Radio Free Readout, the voice of the American Readout.
There is an exodus happening in America today, from cities full of crime and corruption to the rural areas of clean and sustainable living. Like-minded patriots are coming to North Idaho in search of a simpler, self-reliant lifestyle. I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's Great Readout, North Idaho. Sometimes God puts you somewhere for a special reason. For me, I believe it's to help like-minded patriots find safety and security for their loved ones. At Revolutionary Realty, we educate buyers about solar power, growing food, obtaining water, and personal security. I became a realtor in 2008 at the bottom of the real estate market, but not the top. I believe that there is a grand plan and that I'm just a part of it. My job is to help people discover and relocate to America's Great Redoubt. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us at revrealty.us to learn more. That's www.revrealty.us, and God bless you.
As we mentioned earlier and yesterday, we have a special guest with us today, somebody who's had a great deal of influence in many different ways over me and my mindset toward prepping, really got me organized on my journey toward prepping with his very first book, Patriots, A Novel of the Coming Collapse. And we're joined today by author James Wesley Rawls. He is an internationally recognized authority on family disaster preparedness and survivalism. Many of you have already heard of him and are followers and great fans of his over at survivalblog.com. If you don't already know it, he's a former U.S. Army intelligence officer and also a fiction and nonfiction writer. So it is an honor and a pleasure to have you here with the inspiration of Radio Free Redoubt, James Rawls. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, John.
Well, you've been a busy guy, and especially recently, much to my surprise, this kind of caught me by surprise, another book series that's coming out, and I want to talk about that, and then I want to get into practical preparedness tips for the patriots today, for American citizens who may be behind the curve. Maybe they've been prepping all along, but you might have some pointers for them. And let's talk about this, a new book series I'm really excited about. And let's just get into that. Let's put the name out there for the listeners.
Well, the new book series is called The Counter-Caliphate Chronicles. And the first book in the series is called Land of Promise. I want to let people know that it's completely separate from my Patriots novel series.
Yes.
It's also set in the future, a little bit farther in the future, in the 2030s and the 2040s. And it's about the world following the advent of a global Islamic caliphate. And the first book in the series is kind of the introduction to the whole series, and it talks about the advent of a new nation that's set up as a Christian homeland nation, as a nation of refuge for persecuted Christians from all over the world in the Alemi Triangle, which is a region that lies between Ethiopia, South Sudan, and Kenya. It's actually a piece of disputed territory. And in the storyline of this book, a group of Christian investors gets together and they basically petition two of those governments, the government of South Sudan and the government of Kenya, and ask if they are willing to grant sovereignty of that triangle of land. It's about 15,000 square kilometers for the sole purpose of establishing a Christian nation of refuge. And that fictional country is called the Alemi Republic.
Okay, so that's a great foundation to start from. And the more I think, this really struck a chord with me because the plausibility level of this is high, very high on one, right off the bat with the title of the series, The Counter Caliphate Chronicles, because we're seeing a supernatural expansion of this Islamic assault on the world, this invasion of Europe, and setting the stage for the same in America, where they are very clear about it. They don't hold back. They want to establish a global caliphate. So on that, from that point, it's plausible. It's what they're trying to do. They're telling us that. Secondly, this area that you're talking about is dear to my heart because I got involved in some folks that were with the Southern People's Liberation Movement, or the Sudanese Liberation People's Movement, and the SPLA, the army, some Christian missionaries were smuggling Bibles and other material and missionaries into South Sudan as they were fighting the Muslims in the north, for real, in the 90s. And I came so close to going over there and being part of that, but I very closely researched this. So this is plausible also because that is a strong Christian influence in Southern Sudan there.
Yes.
Okay, so I didn't mean to run away with that. I'm sorry. I wanted
to... Oh, that's quite all right. I just need to mention that both the current president of South Sudan, Salva Kiir Mayardit,
yes,
and the president of Kenya are both Christians.
Yes.
So it is plausible to that extent as well. If anyone is going to say yes to a Christian homeland nation, it would be people like them.
Yeah. I saw this when I was looking through, you know, this book, Land of Promise. I'm thinking South Sudan here, but you took it down farther. Is that correct? The Alemi?
Well, yes. I wanted to make it geographically distinct, but I wanted to put it in a place that was plausible. Because when you come right down to it, the last thing that any nation wants to do is grant sovereignty to part of its territory. Rule number one for any nation state is you never give up any of your territory.
Right.
What happened in the former Yugoslavia was a prime example of why nations typically don't do that, because it got broken up piecemeal.
Mm-hmm.
And then very soon after, a war broke out between these neighboring nations.
Yeah.
So it would take exceptional circumstances and an exceptionally undesirable piece of land for sovereignty to ever be granted. And that's why I picked the Alemi Triangle, which is one of the most desolate pieces of land and most remote pieces of land on the planet.
You know what's interesting is you're talking about this this undesirable little chunk of dry dirt that nobody can really do anything with. So, yeah, we'll give it to you. What comes to mind for me is Israel. You know, that was obviously a fulfillment of prophecy and God had his hand in it. But I also believe he had his hand in the building of America. And when you do something in a God-honoring way, when this is done to glorify the Lord, supernatural things take place. And vineyards and crops begin to emerge.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that you know, vineyards and crops emerge, the land becomes usable and bears fruit. Hey, when God's involved, anything's possible.
That's exactly what happened in Israel after the British mandate ended, and almost supernaturally, or I'd say truly supernaturally, there was a vote in the United Nations that granted independence to modern Israel. If you look at what's happened in Israel geographically, in terms of crop production, and even its very climate has changed since its modern independence. There have been millions of trees planted in Israel, and yes, they've literally changed the climate of the former Palestine, yep, Palestine, yep, mandate. In settling that area, the land of Israel was either absolute desert, like the Negev in the south of the country, mm-hmm, and a bit of fairly fertile ground, and the rest was all swamp. And the Israelis were very clever. They brought in eucalyptus trees from Australia to dry up the swamps. Huh. And in fact, the Australians didn't want to even give them Australian eucalyptus tree seedlings. They actually smuggled them into the country to establish those seedlings and to dry up the swamps. And then the Israelis have become absolute masters at building greenhouses. And yes, there are more greenhouses per capita in Israel than there are in any other nation on the earth. And they've been incredibly successful. God has really blessed the nation of Israel. And yes, I definitely wanted to draw a parallel about how a group of believers can take a piece of God, what looks like God-forsaken country, and turn it into a God-blessed country by the hand of God.
Yeah, in an area that is already strongly represented by people of Christian faith, real world, not fictional. It truly is that way there. And so this nation now, the land of promise, it's listed as a nation of many firsts. Would you like to talk to that a little bit about what sets this apart besides giving it to, you know, was it sanctifying it, you know, for the Lord, or setting it to, you know, dedicating it to God?
But yes, it's also a nation of firsts in that it's the very first nation on the planet in modern times to be established with no taxes whatsoever. No income tax, no property tax, no sales tax, no import duties, no taxes at all. The entire government, and it's a very small government, is funded by either donations or by the fees that are charged for selling passports to foreign citizens who want to buy Elemi citizenship so that they'll have their permanent tax home in a nation with no taxes.
Hmm.
So, and the nation is also a nation of firsts in a lot of other ways. It has an absolute right to keep and bear arms, where basically the only weapons you can't own without a permit are weapons of mass destruction. And I truly mean mass destruction, like nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons.
Right.
But if you want to buy an artillery piece or a mortar or a machine gun, they're in this fictional new country, they are perfectly legal and completely unrestricted.
That's how it should be. I've been reading so many books, and of course, a lot of the themes now, from even in Patriots, was a extremely powerful tyrannous government shoving its boot on the throat of the American citizens. And of course, you know, that's not just these are fictional books I'm talking about, but they're actually kind of drawn from so many historical examples where the people were powerless to resist it. And our founding fathers were very clear that the citizens were to have the type of firearms that would be equal, you know, they could be equally matched with a military that could rise up and, or, you know, you'd be used to oppress the people.
Right.
And in the cases where, you know, stories are written where people resist, where they have the success is where they have the weapons that are equivalent to what the military uses. And so, yeah, that's boy, if we could get that idea to catch on, not in America.
Well, I'm hopeful that this novel is actually going to go down in history as the novel that became a nation. That's really my fondest desire.
Well, it could certainly
see
could
that it would actually inspire a group somewhere, and it could be like a little chunk on the coast of Iceland, okay,
sure.
Or on the coast of Australia, or I don't know, some place where a new nation could be formed, and that this would somehow inspire people to beseech God, and that God would make this happen.
Well, you might be surprised at where new nations might pop up in the future. Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, I already had several emails from people suggesting that this sounds like the American Redoubt on a grand scale.
Well, hey, that's in the Lord's hands. We'll see. All we have to do is just be obedient, be ready to go where He guides us, and we'll see. But hey, let's take a break. We are talking to author James Wesley Rawls about the new book series, The Counter Caliphate Chronicles, and the first book, which is coming out in December, The Land of Promise. This is the voice of the American Redoubt. Stay right there.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. As many of you know, I, along with many of my Republican colleagues, introduced a series of state sovereignty bills. They would opt Washington State out of a nationalized healthcare system and also out of a national cap-and-trade program and protect the right to bear arms through the Washington Firearms Freedom Act. The Democrat response? The Speaker pro tem of the House claimed Republicans wanted to, quote, lead Washington out of the Union. Local Senator Chris Marr even inferred to a group of constituents that Republicans are racist. The Spokesman Review said that discussing the constitutional boundaries of the federal government is a waste of time. Really. The problem is, we haven't been talking enough about the Constitution and the basic principles that made this nation great. State sovereignty is, in fact, about keeping the nation together and fighting Democrat attempts to destroy small business through bigger government. But the bigger point here is that the President and Democrats like Senator Chris Marr have created a cloud of fear that is overshadowing this country. Businesses are afraid to build new factories, buy new equipment, or hire new employees because of the uncertainty surrounding what new regulations, mandates, and taxes are going to come out of Washington, D.C. and Olympia. The people are afraid of proposed assault weapons ban and the rationing of ammunition, or being labeled traitors for believing what the Constitution says or believing that it means what it says. Fear and anxiety are everywhere. State sovereignty, on the other hand, is about hope. If the federal government would just get out of the way and stay in its constitutionally designed box, we would be free to fix our own problems right here in Washington. If we need to fear anything, it's the notion that more socialism is going to solve our economic crisis. Instead, we should look to 2 Chronicles 7:14 for the answer. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening.
This is Shan Hemphill with Works LLC. We provide lifetime guaranteed holsters and magazine carriers for the armed citizen. Check us out at werkz.com or call 855-WORKS01 for your custom gear needs. Don't forget to use coupon RFR at checkout for 15% off. Thank you and God bless.
All right, we're back with author James Wesley Rawls. And in the last segment, we were just talking about The Land of Promise, a new book series that's coming out in December. And then we're going to start talking about some prepping and what you can do if you've already been down that road. We're going to talk about maybe the timeline we could be on, or at least assess the current situation and understand the sense of urgency that we should have not to get complacent. And we're going to talk to some of the newer preppers. Where do you start? And we're going to get you pointed in the right direction. Before we do, though, James, thank you for sticking around with us here at Radio Free Readout.
Well, thanks again for having me on.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, before we run off from the book, let's talk about that. What is the exact date that is going to be released?
That'll be coming out December 1st, and I'd like people to wait until December 1st to order. It'll be coming out as both an ebook and as a print-on-demand paperback. We haven't even identified the price of the paperback yet. We're still trying to work that out with Amazon. But I can tell you that the ebook is going to be priced at just $2.99 until the 1st of December. Okay. And I'd like people to order right on the 1st of December to try to push the book up the sales rankings, both New York Times bestsellers list and the Amazon rankings, with the goal of getting more publicity for the book. Because once a book gets in the top 10, it tends to get a lot of publicity and more downloads.
That pushes it up toward the top of the list. It gets it in front of more people. And this message right here that we're hoping will inspire some folks to start thinking outside the national boundaries that we know today and outside the box. Okay, and I just pulled it up, and I'm looking at it. It's available. It's available now. You can pre-order on Amazon for $2.99, but hold off on that, right?
Yes, please wait until December 1st. Please mark your calendars, folks. And okay. Then the price will actually just be going up to $3.99 on the 2nd of December. So please wait until December 1st to order. I'd really appreciate it, folks.
I'll do that. I'll get my copy on December 1st, and we'll push it out there. We'll promote it too. This is pretty cool. Okay. Now, you are kind of the, I want to put this label on you, the grandfather of prepping in America, but
I'm more like a grandchild because a lot of people that came before me. I don't want to take any credit there.
Right. But you, it's very clear what you did took it to the next level. It made it very real with Patriots. It really painted a picture that people said, this could happen. And what would we do? Where would we start? And of course, I always recommend when somebody comes to me, their eyes are as big as pie plates, and they're like, what do? We realize things are bad. And I say, there's two books. Start right now and then come back and talk to me. Patriots by James Rawls and One Second After by William Fortune. There you got a group of people that are prepared and a group of people that aren't. And there's a really great contrast, and that'll get you on a level playing field. Then we can talk from there. And so now that we're here talking to you, I know there's a lot of folks that have been prepping for a long time in this listening audience, or they've been at it for, they're awake. So we don't have to worry about waking people up. But what are some things I would say to the new prepper? What's your top five list of things that people need to put on their action item list of work on this right now?
Well, I think water should be at the very top of their list. Every family needs to have a water filter, or better yet, two. You should probably have a large, high-volume kitchen filter, like a Big Berkey or a Big Berkey clone. There's a lot of inexpensive clones available on the market right now that use a food-grade 5-gallon plastic bucket instead of stainless steel for the main vessel. And I think that should be at the very top of your list. That second filter should probably be a compact filter, like a Katahdin, something of that sort.
Okay.
Or maybe a Sawyer mini filter. Those sorts of filters are excellent. And you need to have a compact filter like that for your bug out bag or your backpack.
Sure.
So water's at the very top of the list, and then people need to think in terms of food storage and especially alternative power and alternative cooking. Here in the inland Northwest, we're blessed with copious firewood, but unless you have a proper wood stove and a proper wood cook stove, you're not going to be able to take full advantage of that.
That's right.
So it's important that people get really good quality stoves installed. Practice cleaning your chimneys yourself. Don't just hire someone to have it done. And there's a learning curve involved with learning to cook on a wood cook stove. It's not until after you've ruined 20 or 30 recipes that you ever start to get good at cooking.
You're right about that. Mrs. Schmidt and I just installed about a month and a half ago. We installed our wood cook stove. It's been sitting there not hooked up for the longest time, and so I finally did that. And that is a whole new way of cooking. And
absolutely,
you have to practice it, and it is a lot of fun. Right now, it's more of a novelty thing, and you know, I'll fix the family Christmas breakfast on it, and I'm looking forward to that. But it definitely does take some getting used to. Any of these, whether you're cooking with Sterno or you're cooking with, you know, wood, a little a rocket stove or anything like that, you've got to practice with the stuff.
Yep, now, there's a learning curve to each of them.
Now, you talked about water filtration, and then you talked about food storage, but you didn't mention anything about water storage. And I just kind of keyed in on that. So would you like to address that? What are your thoughts on folks that are they're planning on? That's their water plan, is to store water.
Unless you're talking about a very short-term situation, it's really not realistic for people to think that they can store enough water to get them through a crisis.
Yeah.
Even if you have a swimming pool with a cover and you have some advanced warning and you can drain your pool and refill it just at the beginning of a crisis, even an entire swimming pool full of water wouldn't last a family a year.
It's amazing to think that, but that is so true. And I went to a conference in Phoenix this last summer, and I met several patriots and their preppers, and I was asking about water. And, you know, some of them do have swimming pools. Some of them have, you know, various different storage. But I'm looking around. I'm thinking, if something major happened, a cyber attack on our power grid, and it went down, this place is not survivable.
Yes. Everyone in most of Arizona would probably end up being refugees within a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Flagstaff would have 5 million people on its doorstep in about 72 hours.
Yep.
So strategic relocation. The American Redoubt has openings for patriots only. All right. Now, okay. Food storage. This is interesting. We've got our own government telling us we should have 72 hours worth of food stored up. They've actually expanded that to a week, although the Department of Homeland Security said people with more than 72 hours worth of food storage could be considered a prepper or a potential domestic homeland terrorist. So we've got but you know what? Doesn't matter what they say. You have a responsibility to take care of your family. Let's talk about food. How much should somebody have stored up, and what should they be storing?
Well, I'm a big believer in people storing first the staple foods that they use on a regular basis. And with that, you know, if you eat oatmeal for breakfast, you should probably have a couple of 100 pounds of oatmeal on hand.
Yeah.
But if you don't eat oatmeal for breakfast, if you buy 200 pounds of oatmeal, you may never use it. And you'll end up either donating it to the food bank or feeding it to your chickens. So it's important that people stock up first with the things they use on a regular basis, put it in airtight food grade containers, preferably with Mylar liners, and use either the dry ice method or the oxygen absorbing packet method to make sure that you're not going to open up that container 2 years from now and find it full of weevils.
Oh, yeah.
So those are the foods I'd recommend stocking up on first. And then beyond that, you should have a short-term supply of very compact foods for your get-out-of-dodge kit.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be things like MREs. And then you should also have as much as you can afford and as much as you have room for storage of bulk foods, wheat, rice, beans, salt, sugar, honey, that you can stock away in quantity, things with that have really long shelf lives that you're basically going to buy cheap and use gradually.
Yeah.
The only caveat there is don't go too heavy on beans, because beans tend to they'll dry out, and after 6 or 8 years, beans get to the point where they're so hard that no amount of soaking will soften them, and they're like little rocks. They're like pebbles in your pan. And the only way you could cook them at that point would be to completely grind them first or use a pressure cooker.
Oh.
So don't go too heavy on beans, but things like wheat has a shelf life that, you know, is basically a lifetime. 80-year-old wheat and still have most of its nutritive value if you store that wheat in whole wheat form. Once it's ground into flour, then it only has a 2 or 3 year shelf life.
Exactly.
With a Mylar bag, it's going to stop most of the oxygen transfer so that your food products, your foodstuffs will store so much longer because they're not oxidizing.
Yeah. Okay, good stuff. Now, there's some folks that are really on a tight budget, and I know there's a lot of people hurting right now in the country, and they feel like they can't. I want to prep, I want to store up, but I just can't afford it. But there's alternatives. What would you say to those folks?
Well, first and foremost, I'd say you probably can't afford not to store food.
Yeah,
because if you're buying food in bulk, you're buying inexpensive food.
That's true.
And simply going to your local Walmart or Costco or Sam's Club or whatever and buying rice in 50-pound bags, you're paying only about 20% of the price per ounce that you pay when you buy rice in a 1 or 2 pound package.
Very true. Mrs. Schmidt can attest to that.
You save money from the very beginning by buying in bulk, and all of that savings you can turn into storing extra. So buy in bulk, plan ahead, team up with neighbors so that you can travel together to buy food in bulk, so you're only paying for gas once and not multiple folks buying smaller quantities. And by buying in quantity, you can also command better prices, whether you're buying wheat or peas or beans or lentils or whatever directly from a farmer. You can buy a lot of this stuff straight out of the grain bins.
Yes.
Especially places like the American Readout. If you ask around, you can go buy lentils or wheat directly from a farmer.
That's
and
right.
You know, it's not going to be cleaned grain. You're going to have to run it through a sieve yourself, and you're going to want to have to be very careful with it in terms of what goes into your mouth or what goes into a wheat grinder, in terms of sieving that grain very carefully so that you don't end up breaking your teeth on pebbles.
Yes. Exactly. Very true. It's single cleaned, not triple cleaned. And I know of some folks that we actually found a resource for that. These folks that have silos, especially, you know, in the fall and during the summer, where they've got split pea, you know, lentils, they've got barley, anything you want. And it is pennies on the dollar compared to going to a store. Amazing. So, okay, with that, we're going to take another break, and then we'll be back to wrap everything up. We are with James Wesley Rawls from SurvivalBlog.com and the author of many books that most of this audience is already familiar with. Okay, this is the voice of the American Readout, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi everyone, this is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
Therefore, propaganda is vastly more important in democratic societies.
In recognizing a communist, physical appearance counts for nothing. If he openly declares himself to be a communist, we take his word for it. If a person consistently reads and advocates the views expressed in a communist publication, he may be a communist. If a person supports organizations which reflect communist teachings, or organizations labeled communist by the Department of Justice, she may be a communist. If a person defends the activities of communist nations while consistently attacking the domestic and foreign policy of the United States, she may be a communist. If a person does all these things over a period of time, he must be a communist. But there are other communists who don't show their real faces, who work more silently,
All right. Thank you for joining us here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. We are joined by James Wesley Rawls. And if you're just tuning in late, if you're just joining us now, we started off in the first segment talking about the new book that's coming out December 1st. And then we started getting into prepping, listing the five top items that everyone starting out, whether you're old or new with prepping, you should be taking into consideration. So we talked a little bit about water. We talked about some food storage. And we've got a couple of other very important things we want to get to. And before we do, though, James, I know that you've got some great resources for the prepper to get them off and running. And you have some books available as well that can really get people off to a great start and beyond. So do you want to talk about a couple of those resources that they can get to get more information?
Yeah, people don't have to invest $10 in a book. They can actually get a lot of this free at my website. It's a blog called survivalblog.com. People can go to that website. The entire archives for the past 10 years of Survival Blog, with over 80,000 archived letters and articles,
yes,
are all available free of charge. It's fully searchable. And there have been a plethora of articles on just about every topic imaginable relating to family preparedness.
Yeah.
Take full advantage of those, folks, and print out the most important articles. Make yourself a reference binder.
Yes.
Because that's your EMP-proof backup.
That's right.
Again, it's survivalblog.com. And for newbies, I have a special static page at survivalblog.com. If you look in the left-hand column, there's a button there marked Getting Started. If you click on that, that will kind of bring you up to speed on the basics of prepping. And there's also an Excel spreadsheet in that same left-hand column. If you click on where it says List of Lists, that will bring up an Excel spreadsheet that will give you a pretty good general guide to the sorts of categories that you need to consider for yourself, and so that you can tailor your own lists of to match your specific needs based on where you live, your stage of life, your health, and also your, you know, what kind of resources you're starting with.
Yes. Great resources, and I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's been – I mean, you know, survivalblog.com is a regular staple at the Schmidt House, but I completely forgot about that spreadsheet, the list of lists. That was so – I got to dig that back up. It's thank you for reminding me of that. That was a great primer that was really helpful for me and several other folks. So I'm glad you mentioned that. Okay, in the second segment, we talked about the first two items. We wanted to go through the list of the top five items. We mentioned water and we mentioned food storage. What's next on the very, very do not overlook list?
Well, I would say a compact alternative power system. That most families can afford to buy a 5 or 10 watt PV panel, a photovoltaic power panel, to generate DC power and to charge a modest size battery bank. For a family on a budget, what I would recommend is that you either use a automobile jump starting pack, which is a gel cell battery in a plastic case. It usually comes with a pair of jumper cables, but they usually have a cigarette lighter outlet on them as well to provide you 12-volt power. You can charge that jump pack from a small photovoltaic panel. Again, a 5 or 10-watt panel. The most affordable ones are available from places like Northern Tool. They're very inexpensive. Most of those, however, are made in China for anyone who has reservations about buying things made in mainland China. You might want to look for ones made in Japan or Taiwan instead.
Sure.
And then the a little bit bigger battery storage for power would be, I would recommend you buy a pair of golf cart batteries. You'd buy 2 6-volt batteries, wire them in series, and then the power coming off of the negative and the positive terminal at the far end of that that pair of batteries is going to be 12 volts DC.
Yep.
And with that, you can get, you can charge batteries, smaller batteries like AA and 9 volt and C and D cell batteries with a 12 volt charging tray. And you can get a 12 volt, input battery charging tray from, you get a mail order from eBay or Amazon or whatever, or you can go to your local Camping World store. They basically anything you need for 12 volt DC, they have there because yes. They cater to people who live in RVs. The importance of having a small photovoltaic power system can't be overstressed.
Yeah.
If you are an average prepper and you think you're squared away and you don't yet have that system, you're not really squared away. Because In any long-term situation where the power grid goes down for an extended period of time, your only way of charging, having 12-volt power available and to be able to charge smaller batteries will be the battery of your vehicles. And then once you run out of gas for your vehicles, you'll have no way to keep that vehicle battery charged.
That's right.
So you really need to have a compact power system so that you will not run out of power for your crucial electronics. And I'm not talking about your iPod so you can listen to music.
Yeah.
I'm talking about things like the batteries for your handheld 2-meter or MERS band handy talkies.
Yeah, that's
you push that, to talk communications with your neighbors. Or The batteries for your Dakota Alert so that you'll have advanced warning when someone's rolling onto your property.
Yeah.
Or even more importantly, the batteries for your night vision equipment so that you'll be able to defend your property, not just in daylight, but around the clock. So having that compact power system is crucial. And if you've overlooked it, folks, I recommend that you very quickly get a hold of the key components. Again, there's only really three key components: a small photovoltaic power panel, a PV panel, anywhere between 5 and 20 watts, a battery bank of some sort, whether it's a jump pack or anywhere from 2 to a dozen golf cart batteries, wired either in series or a series parallel arrangement so that you end up with 12 volts at the far end, and a battery charging tray that has set up for 12 volt input so that you can charge all of your 1.5 volt and various low voltage DC batteries all the way up to 9 volts from your 12 volt power source.
Absolutely.
Get that squared away, folks. It's crucial.
This listening audience definitely understands the importance of that. There's no doubt, because we have so many, Amron radio operators, out there in the audience, and so many people have placed a great deal of emphasis on emergency communications, whether they're just listening on a shortwave radio or they're actually communicators, using two-way HF or VHF communications. So power is critical. You lose, you don't have power, you don't have comms, you don't have command and control or any type of coordinated efforts. So, yeah, that they definitely understand the need for that. And,
You mentioned ham radio. That reminds me of one other thing I should mention for a compact power system. If at all possible, I recommend that people do not use cigarette lighter plugs and outlets. Those are not really a proper design at all. I recommend that people standardize with Anderson power poles.
Yes.
The Anderson power pole is a modular, genderless connector, and they're color-coded red and black. They're very sturdy, and they're compact. They're only like an eighth of the size of a cigarette lighter plug. And most importantly, they don't pop out unexpectedly. Cigarette lighter plugs are kind of a compromise because they were originally designed for cigarette lighters, which were designed to pop out when they got up to temperature.
Yes.
So you want to have really reliable connectors, and again, they're called Anderson Power Poles, P-O-L-E-S.
Yep.
And you can find those through Amazon.com, and they're also available from a wide variety of ham radio vendors, like HRO, for example.
Yeah, that's definitely become, across Amron, has become the standardized communication, or the power connector, because, well, for standardization purposes. I mean, you know, if you roll up and link up with another ham operator, everybody's standardized. It's just you pull your stuff out and plug right into a system. Where without that, you have so many different types of power connectors. There's at least 8 to 10 different types of power connectors out there. And but the MCOMs, or emergency communications community, has all gone over to these Anderson power connectors. So I'm with you there. That is very important for your power setup. Okay, so we talked about power. What's next on our list?
I'd say advanced first aid. And here I'm not talking about a typical first aid kit, which is essentially just what you would call a boo-boo kit with Band-Aids and yep. antiseptic or antibacterial ointment. I'm talking a full-up trauma kit. And there's a number of vendors on the market that sell quite good ones. One of them, in fact, advertises on my website at survivalblog.com. Get yourself a proper trauma kit and the training to go with it. Just like ham radio equipment, just like a firearm, your medical gear is no better than the hands employing it. And those hands need to have the proper training.
Absolutely.
I'm often asked by people, well, you know, I have an AR-15 and a 10/22 and a Glock. What's the next gun I should buy? And I often tell them, well, you shouldn't be buying another gun. You should be getting training for the guns you already have.
Yes. Yes. So
it's really important that, likewise with medical equipment, that you get the best, training you can find. Start out with a very inexpensive basic training that's available through the American Red Cross locally. Take those Red Cross classes, including a CPR class, and go on from there. If you have the time and the inclination, I would recommend that you get qualified as an EMT or paramedic.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic training.
Yeah.
And if you don't have the time to be involved in that at a later date, then at least get commercially available training through, like, the Wilderness Medicine Institute offers some really good training. Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy have fantastic training.
Yes.
There's a lot of different training organizations that offer advanced first aid. And the two types of training to concentrate on for disaster preparedness are trauma and burns.
Yes.
Because let's face it, if we're talking about a lawless situation, there's going to be a lot of trauma, whether it's blunt force trauma, knife wounds, gunshot wounds. And those you're not going to fix with a boo-boo bag, okay?
Right.
You're going to need a proper trauma kit and actually a lot more even beyond that for a long-term recuperation. And burns will be of particular importance because you're going to have a lot of people who are refugees from the big city who have never worked around an open fire before for cooking or for heating. And they're going to make a lot of mistakes, and there's yep. going to be a lot of burns on your hands.
Yeah. I was in the middle of a book series right now, and this old guy is out there trying to do his own firewood and, you know, takes his part of his leg off with a chainsaw. And, so somebody was smart enough to throw a tourniquet on, mark it properly, and get him up to the only person they had in their community was a veterinarian. And, so I was going to say, there's some advanced skills out there that you just have to become a veterinarian to have certain skills. So make friends. You know, if you can't become,
you know, all the medical professionals in your community.
Yes.
And by the way, you mentioned chainsaw trauma. I'm a big believer in wearing what we call AT-GAT, which stands for all the gear all the time.
Yeah.
Whenever you bring out a chainsaw, even if it's just make one little cut, you need to put on all your gear. You're going to wear Kevlar chaps, boots, gloves, And I like to wear a full safety helmet that has, that integrates a face mask, a bump helmet, and earmuffs all in one.
Mm-hmm.
And as, if you wear all the gear all the time, you'll have no excuses for cutting your leg off.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. That ties right in with our trauma and burns. And then we've got, well, let's see, there's, four items on the list. What would you say rounds up, number five, somebody needs to definitely put on their list for, adding to their preps?
I would say communications. Yeah. It's really important that people have both, local communications and long haul communications. For local communications, I'm a big fan of the good old fashioned, U.S. Army surplus, TA-1 or TA-312
yep.
field telephones. It's proven technology. They're absolutely bomb-proof. They basically last forever. And as long as you have decent combo wire, you can talk up to several miles on a field phone to coordinate retreat security with your neighbors. And that's fairly secure communications.
Yes.
If you end up burying the wire. It's crucial that you have push-to-talk communications of some sort with your neighbors, because without that coordination, you're basically on your own. If your farm or your neighbor's farm comes under attack, you need to be able to coordinate.
Yes.
The other really important thing for local communications would be local push-to-talk handheld radios. And it could be something as simple as an FRS or GMRS radio, but my favorite is a band fairly close by, which is the MURS band, which stands for Multiple Use Radio Service. The MURS band is excellent because, yes, it's short-range VHF, limited to line of sight, but it's in a band that's very lightly used, especially in rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
You can drive for miles and miles and miles through rural communities with a scanner set to MERS frequencies and not hear a thing. That's how lightly used the MERS band is.
Yes.
And the MERS band has several advantages for a handheld walkie-talkie. With one walkie-talkie, if it's capable of being programmed with multiple frequencies, you can have one frequency for push-to-talk with your neighbors. You can have the frequency for your Dakota Alert driveway alarm, which happens to use the MERS band.
Yep.
And you can have it programmed with the National Weather Service weather frequency for your region, which happens to be right next to the MERS band.
Absolutely.
So I think it's the ideal local communications band to use. Again, it's like any other radio, it's not secure, but at least it has some great advantages. For long haul, I think people should be looking in terms of an HF radio. There's a lot of really good ones out there. My old standby for years and years has been a Kenwood 780.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot of really comparable ones out there. For the last 15 years, HF has been pretty dead because the sunspot numbers have been low and we don't have very good propagation for HF. So when you go to ham radio swap meets, you can often pick up HF transceivers for next to nothing.
Yes.
This is the time to buy them. Don't wait until the sunspot numbers come up and everybody gets hot on HF again, because then all that equipment will get expensive again. Now is the time to buy it.
That's true. And for the listeners who may not know, the ham fests are like a gun show for radios. And anything related to communications, it's going to be there, from antennas to rigs, HF rigs, and ham equipment. It's all there. And boy, some bargain basement prices for
sure.
Yes,
often it's retired hams who have either have chronic health conditions or they've simply moved away from ham radio because they've got involved with things on the internet. And that gear is often available for, you know, pennies on the dollar, really.
Yeah.
The other long-haul things that people should be looking at would be a good general coverage receiver. Here I'm talking about one that would cover all the way from the AM band all the way up to 30 megahertz. So that's what's called a general coverage receiver. Make sure, though, that you buy one that'll run on 12 volts because you want to have it be able to run it on your backup power system.
Yes, absolutely.
And then beyond that, the other thing you should probably have is a police and public service band scanner that will cover the police and fire department and air traffic control frequencies. And again, you want to have one that will run on 12 volts. And nowadays, you really should have one with trunking demodulation capacity. You want to have one that's capable of demodulating trunked communications because that's what most of the police departments are switching over to.
Yeah. And
you won't be able to listen to their scrambled communications, but at least any that are trunked, you'll still be able to listen to.
Two things on that I want to address. First of all, also with the your general coverage AM, you know, shortwave receiver, you should make sure you have single sideband capability on that.
You want to have it be able to be set so that you can listen to people talking on upper or lower sideband.
Correct.
And it should also have a BFO, a beat frequency oscillator, so that it will take that and turn it into beeps so that you can listen to Morse code.
Yes, absolutely. And the one other thing too on the police and public scanners, not only trunking, but they're more expensive, but the P25 or Project 25 decoding capabilities, because what people don't realize is
it's really nice to have.
Yeah, it is.
You know, for people who are more advanced, I would recommend they do that. And in fact, if they're really advanced, they should probably look for a spectrum analyzer as well.
Good point.
If you want to do full on SIGINT and not just be scanning through the bands, but actually be able to in effect watch an entire band and watch for spikes coming up that you can tune to, a spectrum analyzer is a fantastic piece of kit.
Yes, and that can be done cheap now with the SDRs. If your computer's up and running, you have a small laptop, it's, you know, uses very low power. With the software-defined radio, now they have these. I mean, you can watch a wide portion of a band now. And so it can be affordable. I know signal analyzers can be really expensive.
Yeah.
But that's really, really good stuff.
Yeah, there's more and more that's available to be ported into a laptop, including scanning. And there's software that's available that can even watch a band and create a history of when particular frequencies are active and when they're not for logging things from a SIGINT standpoint.
That's true. You can record it and actually capture it and go back and listen to stuff. I've only heard of that, and I've just kind of seen it mentioned, but I haven't really delved into it myself. But that reminds me, so I'm going to have to do that. That's really good. Okay, well, that pretty much that's our list of five things, and if that doesn't overwhelm the new prepper, then I don't know what to tell you. But there's some great resources there. Go to survivalblog.com, and as he mentioned, there's some great books, some great resources, but there's also some free resources too. If you go to survivalblog.com on the left-hand side, thank you for the reminder. There's a static page on getting started, and then, of course, that Excel spreadsheet with the list of lists. And that is I couldn't recommend that more for a place for folks to get started. Or maybe you've been doing this a long time. There's some things maybe you've overlooked, and there's always something. No, don't ever stop learning. There's so much stuff out there. So, James Rawls, thank you very much for being with us and taking the time. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. And, we look forward to your book coming out December 1st. And, is there any parting shots you want to send out to the listeners?
No, I just want to encourage the listeners to become avid listeners of Radio Free Readout. If you're just occasional listeners, you're probably missing out. You should be listening to it every week. There's fantastic guests fantastic amount of information that's covered, and people really should keep their finger on the pulse of what's going on with Radio Free Readout. You offer a fantastic service, and people should take full advantage of it.
Well, thank you very much, sir. That means a lot. I appreciate that. Okay, we'll let you go then, sir, and you just have a blessed week, and well, may the Lord just continue to bless you as he obviously has been.
Well, thank you so much, and I pray for all of your listeners that if they feel convicted, that they should go ahead and get prepared. It is time to stock up and team up and train up, folks.
Roger that.
Radio Free Readout.
All right. Hope you all enjoyed that. Go check it out. Make sure you wait until December 1st to make your order on that. Great anticipation waiting for that. Okay. You guys have a blessed week. Don't forget, tomorrow noon we'll be uploading Partisan Radio. And you just have a blessed week until we meet again. Thank you for all your prayers and your support and encouragement. This is the voice of the American Readout. Good night.